Botanisi Tandwa. This is your host, Nonhlanhla Kheso, Miss Radiant Emitting Light. Just bask. Wait, please smile for me. That's what we are about. Welcome to the Plug Sessions. Bota bota to all the Plug Sessions listeners. Looking at the state of the country and with the events clouding South Africa at the moment, it became a matter of urgency that as a community, we familiarize ourselves with the impact our actions have on the economy. So when you don't know, it is good to ask. Today, we are joined by an econometrics student, Mahlatsi Kekana, who is here to break things down for us and put things into perspective. Greetings, Mahlatsi, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's a lovely morning, but yeah, there's not much to complain about. I'm doing well.
Okay, with regards to everything that's happening around, at least there's nothing to complain about sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay. Gratitude all the way. I'd like for you to just give us a background, short, brief background of who Mahlatsi is and why it's befitting that we have you in the Plug Sessions, why it's just it's of vital importance to have somebody like you today joining us.
Well, what's happening in the country is sad because of the aftermath of everything that will unfold in the next weeks, in the next months, in the next years. But I am an econometrician or studying econometrics. And I have interest in politics, whether it be, you know, I've read a little bit about Marxism and, you know, the free market capitalism system and so on. And, you know, I've got my views on how the economy can be fixed. And we all have, we look and we say, you know, this is the kind of economy that we want. But unfortunately, you know, we've got different political thoughts on how we get there. I think that's why I'm here to give my insight or my view on the economy and how it has been affected.
Okay. I'd just like for you to just break things down for us. So you go on in the terms you use within your field and space, and I'd like you to have the patience to break it down for us, because I feel like there's just this distinction between those who know and those who don't know. And the thing is, if we could come together and all have the same understanding of simple concepts that are out there, but we actually don't know what they mean, you know, the meaning of them. So I'd like for you to just start on a light note or a basic one. What is looting? What is looting in retrospect to what is happening in South Africa?
When the desertation of the human condition in how people think, or the circumstance in which economically in which people find themselves in. You know, if you look at how we have been protesting, you know, since democracy, it's not unusual. It has been happening in small communities, but you know, if you look at the news, it has been scaled as something that has never happened in democratic South Africa, for people to loot, or for the level of violence that is so disturbing to the economy that jobs are going to be lost and jobs are not going to be recovered anytime soon. So, so yes, people are angry, and the service delivery and so on is bad, because yes, people might say it's President Jacob Zuma is just he sparked the whole thing. It's not that he caused people to riot or to loot to that extent. No, I don't think it's him. He's not responsible for that. But it's something that has already been there, with the frustrations of the lockdown. People lost jobs during the lockdown, and it's very difficult to find a job in this country. That's the reality, and people are conscious. People sit down in their houses and they look into the future and be what am I going to do in the next 5 years? What am I going to do in the next 2-3 years? And to come and tell that person that you can't go loot, of course, it's an act of criminality, and to threaten someone's income and not expect the person to say something is also to be naive. But to sit in a helpless, hopeless, circumstance is something that is sad, and as a community we have been avoiding for a very long time. So the economic implications are going to be dire. The country has been stagnating since 2011. We had the highest GDP in 2011, around about $400 billion. And now we're sitting at around 350. So the economy has not been growing for the past, for the past 10 years.
Hmm.
And so, which means that, the gains that have been made under the presidency of Thabo Mbeki have been lost. And not only that, to say that the presidency of President Thabo Mbeki was successful, because it was, it was a global growth that was being led by China. Mm. China was growing at 12%, and we are at 0 point something. In fact, we're at our negatives last year. So which means the economy was, in real terms, declining. And now it is difficult for people to understand that Rome was not built in one day. Yes. We're not going to wake up to a South Africa tomorrow, or maybe, next month or next week, even 2 years from now, with an ANC that is accountable, that is governing, to an extent that would lead to an economy that will grow fast. No, I don't think so. You've got hedge fund managers, in the rest of the world, and they look at South Africa, they look at our politicians, and I do understand that we've got liberation type of politics, but if you're an investor outside the country, and you're looking at our politicians calling themselves comrades and cadres and so on TV, it's something that does not really give them confidence in our economy. So the retail is a small arm of the entire supply chain, distribution, the entire value chain. You've got a lot of things involved. For the retail sector to be hit like that, including harbors, I saw the Durban harbor was also attacked, which is, it's not only the biggest hub in Africa, but it sends goods to the entire country from China, from the East, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's gonna be bad. It's really going to be bad. Because we're sitting at negative. If we want an economy to grow, it has to grow at least at a very high single digit, which will be 5%. But you know, China's growing at around about 11-12%.
Mm-hmm.
So we are still behind. And unfortunately, people, investors are not pouring in money in South Africa. And I think that's why I have a problem with the centralized, centralized government, which will be socialism. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the United States was pumping in around about $500 billion into China for the past 20 years.
Okay.
Every single year. So which is a lot of money that China needed for development. Unfortunately, China was, you know, offering cheap labor, and you know, and companies were flooding into China. Doing business in China was easier. And not only that, there was stability in the country. So which is something that we don't have in South Africa. You've got, you know, the, you know, land expropriation without compensation. You know, for us in the country, it might seem, I think it's a very emotional topic that is also been polarized by politicians, mm-hmm. that if land is expropriated without compensation, then everything will be fine. But the honest truth is it does not make sense, and it's also not true. But there's also a yearning for distribution in the country, for redistribution of the land and so on. So I wouldn't want to touch on that. But as for the riots, as I've said, that the retail is a small arm in the supply value chain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got the oil refineries have been closed. And not only that, we're exporting to other countries. Coal has to move from Mpumalanga to KZN, to China, which is just a new deal that I think we got last year, because the Chinese had a problem with the Australian government and so on, and they opted for South Africa. And you know, countries, if you can't guarantee them security and protection that you will be able to supply, they will move to other countries, or they'll, you know, unless if they don't have a choice. But looking at the many, you know, coal supplying countries in the world, they do have a choice. I just saw, you know, is it Walmart was retrenching last year? They announced around about 2,000. So it's still going to be bad. So I don't know if you want to comment on the stuff that I said, or I should just continue.
No, I actually do want to comment. I didn't want to interject because I didn't want to mess up with your trail of thought. I wanted to comment on what you spoke about, the Thabo Mbeki era. You know, for me, I feel like it was the initial climb of a roller coaster, because it was this new democratic country and everything was fresh. So do you know that climb, that initial climb of a roller coaster?
Yeah.
And now we are on the downside, you know. Now we are on the terrors and the screams because now it tends to slide. That's why I do agree with you that we can't say it's his presidency or his policies and, you know, his government that made things happen. So that I agree with 100%. And then in terms of us comparing ourselves with China, you know, in terms of our growth and our growing, the indexes that you look at, the percentages, and, you know, as economists, is it fair for a country like ours to actually be in comparison with, as we are developing, and to be in comparison with such a large country that is developed like China?
Well, I think people don't know that in 1994, China was actually poorer than South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the policies or the politics of China, but I do know the methods that they use, that often their citizens have been willing to give up on freedoms for economic emancipation. And that's something that's not going to happen in South Africa.
Mm.
So it's, you know, if you check companies like Apple, they are manufacturing in China. Why are they not manufacturing in the United States? Because it's cheaper, it saves them a lot more money, and they are not regulated as much. They don't have big trade unions that can bully mines. And not only that, you know, I was looking at the chart of the most influential trade unions in the world, and you'll guess number two, COSATU.
Really?
Yes. COSATU is one of the most, is the second, if not compared to the Federation of the People's Republic of China trade union. It's normally ranked number one or number two.
Okay.
Because they can, you know, they can, I think it was 2007, whereby they had a huge, you know, 1.3 million people, from nurses to doctors to, you know, workers in the municipality. They said, we're not going to work. And the government had no choice but to comply. And unfortunately, we are seeing those, you know, the wage increases are affecting us today. The economy was growing, we could afford it then, but with economic decline, we can't afford it, because if you checked the wage bill being the total wages and salaries of public servants, is swallowing up 48% of state revenue. We're not even talking about money to finance education in terms of books and making sure that our schools are in good condition, or the medicines. And so how are we going to fund you know, infrastructural development? How are we going to fund industrial expansion in the country? So that's the elephant in the room for the current sitting minister of finance. So it's so COSATU, and they're still pushing the government for more money. Even when we don't have it, they're asking for increases, and government had no choice but to give them, because COSATU is a force. Yeah, government can kind of nudge it a little bit, but you can't press them that much.
Mm.
And not only that, they took government to court, and fortunately, government won the case that as per the conditions of the country, they signed, you know, just to look at the incompetence of our government as well, they agreed that they are going to increase wages by 1.5%.
Sure. Okay.
For the next 3 years. And now looking at the devastation, we can't even afford it. So it's a lot of things happening in this country that will delay. For me, I think things will remain the same for the next 10 years or so, or 15 years. Because as I've said, Rome was not built in one day.
Yes.
And the frustration of our people to remain in those conditions is painful. And not only that, in South Africa, you feel inequality.
Yes, yes.
You feel it, you
yep.
know? You know, I live here in Pretoria. I've had the privilege to go to, you know, to Sandton, and you view everything and be, you know, you'd be like, you know, people are people really living like this in this country?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be surprised how people live in this country, and how and you've got people who wake up in the morning and they loot and they do what they do. And to tell them not to do that is looking at the state of affairs in this country, and looking at, you know, I don't know if you've looked at the French Revolution. It's the same. It's inequality. And for decades, and we've had many times in the news, economists telling us that inequality, the most unequal country in the world, it's unstable. You can't, there's no way you can, you know, we are actually sitting on the edge of people saying, no, this can't be. And one thing that a lot of people don't understand is that government is limited. Government can't really help them to the extent that they want. And I think I'll go... I'll now explore the economic consequences of this.
And I was about to ask you that this entire thing will have on the economy. Yes, we know there's an impact, and like how big of an impact, you know, the magnitude of the impact that this entire thing will have on the economy. So, yeah, we can continue.
The value chain, you know, if you look at the taxi association, and they have taken, you know, of course you've got people taking the law into their own hands, but if people don't have jobs, if those complexes are not working, or those malls are not working for the next, you know, it's going to take time. Maybe, I don't know, I can't estimate the time in which it will take for most of these places to open. But it obviously means that people won't be going to work, which means the taxi industry won't be making money in Gauteng and in KZN for a while. You know, it means that Walmart, ShopRite, you know, won't be ordering food for these places, which means the supplier will also have to tell the producer that no, we're going to cut on what we want from you. So the entire supply value chain is going to shrink before it expands, or before it starts to recover. And I think it's the numbers are sitting on millions of people who are unemployed. And I was just looking at now at the figures, it's like 600,000 of formal workers that have been laid off due to COVID alone. So with this, you've got billions and billions that have been lost. And it's very difficult to quantify the numbers. So it's, you know, it's going to cripple us. You know, people might be, you know, angry and so on, but at the end of the day, those very same people are the people who are going to suffer.
Yep.
So the economic consequences, and I don't know, of course, you know, if you get the government to operate, you know, to operate well, or to be governed well, then recovery might be seen sooner than later. But with the current state of affairs, South Africa will be the same, you know, for the, you know, I think president, the current sitting president's tenure will unfortunately not be a success. The economy, maybe through accountability and the battles that they're fighting in the courts and so on. But unfortunately, I don't think his first term will be a success. But I think in the scheme on the, you know, looking at the broader view, I think he has managed to, you know, to investors have had confidence in South Africa and so on. But the other thing is that, you know, where there is a market, there will always be a businessman who wants to profit out of it. And there is a huge market opportunity right now in the places that have been looted and burnt down and so on. And ShopRite will go back. That maybe I don't know about macro, you know, but ShopRite will go back because people want food every day. So or Spa, or you know, the I saw in some places the, you know, tech shops were being looted, and you know, that person will have no choice if they don't have insurance or so on. But I saw that just on a footnote, I saw that Kosatu is advocating for, is pushing for a relief fund, which we also don't have money for.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, you know, looking at the dynamics of politics, let's say from the EFF to the DA or to Groenewald, it's gonna be like, oh, now you're taking money and you're giving it to the privileged, to people who are already well off, to fix the problems of the township. But unfortunately, that's how trickle-down economics works, that money flows from the top going down. Wow. That would be the free market thought of it, rather than socialism saying money has to flow. It starts at grassroot level going up.
Yeah.
But it's very tricky if you're going to start things from the grassroots, because how do you emancipate? And in, I think we are the first generation of Black people to go to schools.
Yep.
And looking at the economy of South Africa, you know, South Africa's economy is very tricky to deal with. If, you know, the tertiary sector is around about 60% plus of the, it contributes 60%+ of the GDP in South Africa, which means it needs people who are skilled, it needs people who unfortunately went to school. So which then becomes another problem for people in government to fix, because you've got mass unemployment, which most of the people would, you know, I think qualify for the secondary and primary sector, which are not huge. So hence, and the other thing, when you say tertiary, and that would be the retail trade and, you know, wholesale and stuff, the people employed there, you know, that's the last, that's on the, you know, the tertiary sector, that's the distribution. It also has, you know, it accommodates, you know, I don't know why I feel bad about saying unskilled, but unskilled workers, in a sense. So it's, you know, having to point out at the implications. I think it's I think at the end of the day, it will depend on what the current government decides to do.
Yes.
But would I say that recovery is or should be only given to the hands of government? No. No, we can't say that. But look at how South Africa has treated its wealthy people. And you'll see what because I sometimes have opportunities to go to business conferences and stuff like that. I try to communicate with people. If you look at how it's, you know, even wealthy people in this country, they're afraid of showing their own money, or they're not, you know. For example, Financial Times, I saw it's Johann Rupert, which is a very controversial figure to touch in the politics of South Africa. And he was interviewed and he was like, you know, I feel very powerful in South Africa. I control SARS, I control government, I control the president. All these narratives that, you know, the politician has put on him, and he's just a small fish. You've got, you know, wealthy individuals that are have interests outside South Africa because of you know, if you're involved with people who have access to the global market or global capital and so on. Then it's then you know that I don't think I think the last time where you had you know private state corporation was during Mbeki, and then under Zuma it just eroded because of the entire monopoly capital thing, including black people, because if you're a black person in South Africa and you want to be successful. And at least at that level, there's no way that you don't work with, you know, white people and so on. It's just not, it
You
just won't work.
cooperate.
Yeah, it just won't work. And, you know, if you look at Reagan in the United States, he called all the business leaders in the country and he said, you know what? And just on a footnote, if you look at Britain and you look at the United States, they were doing bad after World War II. United States was not in a good condition after the Cold War with the Soviets and so on. And it took a president like Ronald Reagan. It took you know Margaret Thatcher in the UK to say business, this is the business community. How do we cooperate to build? But in South Africa, you've got this blind or this rejection of big business or entrepreneurs and so on. And if you look at even our president, I think he has a hard time having to engage with these people because of, you know, the atmosphere has been sort of charged against these people. So I think that's one of the problems that we're going to have, unless if the culture and the attitude towards those people changes, then we're going to have a problem. And on another thing, and I'll give you time to comment. If you look at, you know, the JSC has around about $1 trillion sitting there, which some of it belongs to the private public corporation, public fund, and so on, and some of these big business. So we do have the market capitalization of, you know, the entrenchment of capital and finance in this country is deep. So there is money, but it's money that belongs to other people. It's pensions from government, it's pensions from the public sector that people put aside every single month. So we've got a huge, we've got a lot of money to rebuild, but it's people's money. Yes. And the private sector does not trust our government with the holdings of people's pensions that they have, which is another thing that for me hinders growth in this country.
And for me, it does make sense that the private sector doesn't trust the government with people's funds and people's money, because the government truly hasn't proven itself worthy of being able to repay, or having solutions, or having an action plan on how they are going to reimburse the money. So I kudos to the private sector, because if it's my money and I've invested, it's got nothing to do with what is happening in South Africa. I want my dividends. I want my funds. I want my pension funds. So I wouldn't say there's something wrong with the private sector, but I think that they are thinking ahead and they are looking at things in a broader light. I wanted to also comment on how you say our current president did draw in some investors. And for me, maybe it's an opinion, but I feel Ukuthi, it's because of affiliation. He's affiliated with such because of his background and his history. He's been in business. He's been a businessman for a long time. So hence it was easy for him to draw in investors and call his friends and be like, "How guys, come to my country for a bit. Come to my country for a bit." Now we are tapping into something really, really important that will lead us to tackling solutions, possible solutions. But I wanted us to tap into this this gap in the country. This gap is very huge. This gap is very huge. Even if you close your eyes, you will see, you sense the gap. It's no longer a matter of visualizing the gap. It's a matter of you feel the gap in the country. Everywhere, especially here in Cape Town also, the gap is huge between the poor and the rich. And there's no middle class. Especially here in Cape Town, there's no neutralization. There's no neutral. It's either you have money or you don't. You know? And I see it spreading throughout the country. I wanted to tap into the division. You know, we had a division, and I feel like people are still scarred by this division. Through this, these riots, just a recent division as a society. So there was a pro-looting faction and an anti-looting faction. And I experienced it. And I saw how people even would be rude to one another just to prove a point. You know, they were keyboard warriors, you know. And not putting into mind that the people who are looting out there are not even viewing your statuses, or are not even in your Instagram to see all these wars and all these misunderstandings. And what I saw is, if we can't relate and we can't unite even with words, what more is it to break it down to someone who's just at a shack somewhere, at a shack in Alex, and just break it down for them, just so that they understand the impact of what they are doing. I feel like it created a bigger gap within understanding and unity in the country, which is what I wanted to ask. Like, how is it that we have never thought of actually just making, because I feel like your role is very vital as an economist, your role is very vital. And the knowledge of the economy is so important to everyone. Like, I feel it should be the most basic of knowledge for everybody to comprehend, so that we can see the bigger picture. Because I don't think that you can expect me to understand the jargon, expect me to understand the impact, expect me to understand what you are talking about if I've never been taught about it.
You know, just to touch on the division, you know, if you, I think I saw this on one of these documentaries that I like to watch. If you are in Alexandria,
we also want to watch.
I forgot the name of the thing, but it's this thing that they show the lives of South Africans every 7 years. So they start interviewing these people at 7, at 14, at 21, at 28, and so on. So they're just following them throughout their lives. And, you know, if someone is sitting in Alexandria, they can actually see, you know, the Leonardo da Vinci, all of these buildings in Sandton. You know, they, not only that, Sandton is like the richest square mile in the entire African continent. And you're just sitting there. And, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you can see it from, you know, from a distance there. And I also think the people who, you know, who work in these high offices or in these hotels also see. Which, you know, that we don't live each other's experiences, and we don't find each other in many ways. Because the other thing is, if you look at the rich class of society, maybe the middle class tends, you know, gets to see the reality of our people. But honest truth is that we don't know each other. Yes. You know, you've got people living in one side. They never have to go to the squatter camps because the truth is there's nowhere to go to. And so as for one thing, I remember it was an Economic Forum interview that I think it was Deputy President Cyril at the time that he had with, I think it was the President of Norway and President Clinton. And he asked him a question about inequality. Inequality in South Africa has been actually increasing.
Yes.
Why has it been increasing? Because it increased rapidly under Mbeki, because, you know, we were sanctioned, and after being sanctioned, the economy was opened, and now South African firms, and at the time being the people who already had, which were mostly, you know, white people who already had access to the markets and, you know, big business and stuff like that, was able to spread and you know, globally and into the country and so on. So that's how inequality and, you know, wealth started to, you know, the economy, I think from 2000 to around when Mbeki resigned, the economy grew threefold.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the thing, and the majority was uneducated. The majority did not go to school, which is an unfortunate legacy that we carry into democratic South Africa. But to blame it and say, you know, I've got people my age And oh, not my age, but you know, maybe 5 years or 4 years older than me. And they went to university. And unfortunately, there are no opportunities. So that we should pin on the ANC government as to saying, you know, you 27 years. The ANC has been nothing but a ruling party. And, you know, to tackle, and the other thing, you know, inequality has been increasing globally. That's the other thing, because, you know, it is much easier to make money when you have money. Then, I'm gonna share this story. You know, I was looking at my uncle. He bought shares at Sasol around about 2006, 2007. I think he bought shares at like 500, and he was like, so he was saying, hey, help me because of these online things. And I looked at the shares. The shares were like, worth around 1,000 something. And where he is, he's sure that he has money.
Sure.
And, you know,
What year
me.
did you buy the shares or purchase
Look,
the shares?
he bought them around 2007, 2005.
Sure. Okay.
Now, maybe because of their dividends, but companies are not normally, you know, obligated by law to pay dividends. So I looked at it and be like, okay, so this is how much this guy has, and he does not know that. And I just kept quiet because for some reason, I just did not want to get into it and be like, you know, it is what it is. But
Didn't want
global
to
inequality,
put the things.
but you know, if someone had put like 10 million or 50 million into Sasol at the time, they would have, you know, they would have made in just that period of time, or they would have made double that. So, which is another thing that leaves people in the lower class of society behind. So inequality has been increasing globally, and it has become much, it's difficult to tackle it without, you know, an education system that works in a way that it, you know, it promotes innovation from our people, it promotes entrepreneurship. Because I think, you know, big business, you know, big business does not create employment. It's the small, medium enterprises that create employment. Let's say a ShopRite. How many more people can ShopRite employ?
Not that
Or
many.
Spar, or, you know, there are so, it's, you know, there's so many retail stores that you can open. Before you just, you know, reach your cap and say no, you know, now it's, and then they start playing with the market price so that they make themselves richer and richer and richer. But with the gap, I don't think that inequality is something that we're gonna get away with, not get away with, but something that we can reduce it. But inequality will unfortunately always be there. But what can be done is that people need to be given jobs that will bring them, you know, dignity and so on. But which is also difficult to do. You know, it's not like a, you know, a switch. You know, you listen to politicians and be like, no, but you've been in office for 3 years, and why haven't, as if jobs can be, you know, you can wake up in the morning, switch on, and next thing you've got crazy amount of jobs. And And the other thing, if governments, if the state created jobs, then everyone will be employed. But government, as I've said, the wage bill is, you know, is swallowing up public finance. And not only that, our government is like 25% of the total economic participation in the country. 75% of the private sector. And looking at how we have been hostile towards the private sector is, you know, it just does not make sense. So for me, the solutions to inequality and the solutions to the recovery of the riots and the looting is, I think, number one, it rests upon a government that will be willing to participate with the private sector, a government that is more accountable, democratic institutions that are strong. You know, this is what I always tell people, you know, especially if I'm going to engage people, so that people don't want politics, people don't want ideology, people don't want socialism. People want prosperity, people want, you know, fraternity, people want bread and butter on their table, people want freedom, people want liberty. And I think it's something that every human being wants.
Yep.
You know, above everything else, that's everything that we want. And the free markets, I know, you know, South Africa is a very charged social. In fact, the ANC is a socialist party, but, you know, the Germans are also being led by a socialist party.
Mm.
But no one will associate Germany with being a socialist country because of the policies that they have taken. Of course, you know, when the government operates, it operates for the benefit of social goals, and, you know, but at the end of the day, there are certain, I think there are certain, you know, very ruthless ends of capitalism or socialism that we need to cut out, that are bad for society and so on. But the other thing is that South Africa can't industrialize internally. We need the world. Okay, for example, let me just give this. You know, when we built the Gau trains in, I think the plans came out around 2001, 2002.
Okay.
That we're going to build the Gau train. And when they finished, the budget moved from 3 billion rands to around about 25 to 30 billion. The incompetency of it. But if you gave it to, you know, a public, you know, a private institution where the investors and the board of directors know that it's their money,
yes,
then you wouldn't have had the level of looting or stealing,
yes,
that we saw. Because, you know, at the end of the day, a director can't steal himself. A director, you know, is got shareholders that are always monitoring, that always want to see the books of the company, and they always want to understand where their money went, which is something that you don't have in government. That, you know, government, I think one of the mentalities of a government is that you can throw money to every problem, which mm-hmm. is not always true. But sometimes you need people, especially, you know, entrepreneurs, who say, you know, this is my company, and my money can't be wasted like this. And when you go to government, or you go to the public sector, the people who handle these tenders, you know, tenderpreneurship, you know, they don't really care, because mm-hmm. they just receive money and they do what they do. And not only that, to touch on employment and the solutions to that, I just want to show you a problem that we had here. We imported the trains.
Yes.
We did not manufacture them here. Yes. Because it is much easier to buy than to manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, we wanted a big drilling machine because, you know, Johannesburg is already a big city. So, and for the stations to be inside the city, you have to go under the ground. So they wanted a drilling machine. They imported it from Germany. It cost them like $250 million. And where's the machine now? You see, that machine only cost them, you know, just to give them a little bit of credit, the drilling machine cost them as much as the entire project when they projected it or their figures in 2001. So, which is so then it, you know, but you see at the end of the day, this project that swallowed up 30 billion is not even employing around about 5,000 people.
Mm.
You know, it's because if you go to the stations, there's security, you know, so security guards and the people who manage clean the trains and that's it, and maybe maintenance, but you know, so you've got 30 billion swallowed up to employ in the long term 5,000 people. So to create employment is very daunting. I don't think one can say there's a, you know, if you do this, then employment will be there. So I think it becomes tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Whew, Mahlat, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I've taken in that solutions will come from us realizing that our government must be willing to work with the private sector. You also mentioned that the government should look at the prosperity of the nation and its people. We are not about politics. We are not about factions and divisions. We are about the prosperity of us all as a country and as individuals. And to recognize, actually, be accountable, you know, of where we are and what has caused it, you know. Transparency also is very important in it all. And I'd like to thank you. You carried the conversation so well, Mahlatsi, and I'd like to thank you. And I'm sure the Plug Sessions listeners will be very, very grateful to be hearing such knowledge and drawing from such a well. So thank you, Mahlatsi.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. To our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to join us soon as we keep you plugged.